From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We are taking a major step forward to legalize adult use cannabis and to celebrate the fact that Illinois is going to have the most equity-centric law in the nation.
I showed up for one reason and one reason only, because I'm a black woman. And I wanted to make sure that black people and other people of color showed up in this bill.
Capitol bills in Springfield are like the second coming of the cicadas, you know, every 10 years. And that's not the way to go in regards to funding our infrastructure.
We left families alone. We let that kid know that their voice does not matter. And that although, yes, abuse is wrong, we as a state said, it's okay. We don't need to offer support.
Projections are showing that this year's tax receipts will be the highest that they have been in our state 200-year history. Taxpayers can now be reassured that Governor Pritzker and his Democrats' repeated call for more and more of their hard-earned money to balance the budget is unnecessary.
It was amazing to hear that $1.15 billion would all of a sudden solve $3.4 billion in a structural deficit, $15 billion in backlog of bills, and $150 billion in a pension crisis. That's pretty magical for just $1.15 billion.
That's Senator Toi Hutchinson, a Democrat. Before that, Republican House Leader Jim Durkin talking about what's been termed an April surprise, extra money and revenue the state wasn't anticipating. What does it mean for budget talks? Also, lawmakers and the governor are still negotiating on a bill to legalize recreational cannabis, as well as an infrastructure program. We'll get an update on those. And DCFS remains on the hot seat. And we'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Joining me in the studios at NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, and our longtime Statehouse reporter and observer on this program. Also, NPR Illinois reporter Jacqueline Driscoll, and with us from the Capitol Building, Statehouse editor Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke with Gatehouse Media joins us this week. Doug, it's good to have you on once again.
Glad to be here.
Brian, I'll start with you, and I'll throw it to Doug as well. April surprise, we're calling it. What's going on with the state budget that this, I guess you would call it a windfall of money, has suddenly shown up here in the past month?
Yeah, I was trying to think of the last time that there was actually some good news on the Illinois state finances, and I don't think it's happened in the 15 years or so that I've been here. You have to go back to sort of the 90s when the big problem, as I understand it, and Doug and Charlie can correct me, but the big problem was, what are we going to do with all this extra money that keeps coming in because the state just collects more and more money every year? Well, that actually did happen this year. It's still early to say why the state collected an extra $1.5 billion. They need to crunch the numbers more, but the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the nonpartisan sort of budget gurus of the Illinois General Assembly, say that it seems to be from capital gains and dividends and income. So that suggests maybe the strong stock market. People were perhaps, I've heard hypotheses that people were waiting for a capital gains tax cut to come out of Washington for years now. And when it, you know, they finally did the other tax cut a couple of years ago, and it seems like that this other one was not going to come, that they decided to start selling assets while the market was doing very well. And that led to higher taxes. The bottom line is that Illinois, like you said, it is seeing a windfall. And the real question is now what to do with this money.
And the governor does a couple of things he wants to do with it. One, he wants to use most of it to, or all of it to, get rid of most of the deficit that is in the current state budget. But at the same time, his revenue department said in their opinion, this additional tax collections are going to continue through the next fiscal year. And the significant thing about that is the governor has decided now that he does not have to include a pension holiday as part of his pension fix for next year. If you remember, he was going to stretch out the payment schedule for the pensions by 7 years. That was essentially going to take $800 to $1 billion, depending on whose estimate you use, out of the pensions for the next several years, and there were frankly of a number of lawmakers who were really skittish about that idea, because the reason we're in such dire straits with our pension debt is because lawmakers and governors for years have underfunded the pension systems.
And Charlie,
so if you take that off the table, things improve as far as trying to reach a budget compromise, I think.
Charlie, your thoughts on what this means?
Well, I think it's good news. And as was mentioned, we haven't had this for a while in terms of probably since the 90s and the tech bubble. And then we've just gone up and down and never had this kind of a gain in recent memory. And I think the cautionary note that was sounded by the comptroller telling people not to go wild about this because it could be just a temporary blip, and not to decide, as House Minority Leader Jim Durkin suggested, that, well, we don't need to raise any more revenues, that this would be a mistake. And sort of to put things in context, as of 8 a.m. Friday morning, the comptroller had a bill backlog of $6.5 billion, roughly 81,000 vouchers. And so if you think, well, we maybe brought in $1.5 billion more than we thought we were going to, that's less than a quarter of the bills that are stacked up. So I think it's good news, but I tend to agree with what Senator Hutchison said, that this doesn't mean that we're not going to still need additional revenue going forward.
And Doug, you mentioned a moment ago that there seemed to be some indication from the governor's office that we could see higher than anticipated revenues maybe for the rest of the year. We're not talking about the amount, though, that showed up here in this past month.
No, it's going to be less than that. And there's a proviso that some people have raised about this thing. That, you know, the revenue department, when they put out a statement about this, said that one of the factors that maybe led to this windfall was the performance of the stock market. As we've seen in the last couple of days, you can't depend on the stock market to keep performing better than you expect. So, you know, hinging a lot of rosy revenue estimates on what has happened just in April may be not the wisest thing to do.
This is when we get a lot of revenue coming into the state because people are filing their taxes. So again, this may be tied to some extent to that as well. I mean, because of the tax returns coming in.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And I think this does let the governor back away from his, you know, as we said, one of the things he wants to do with this anticipated future money is not short the pension systems by $800 million. And he says that this, you know, to the extent that this money will continue to come in, that will allow his budget next year to not have to pursue that course. Now, that had been pretty roundly criticized by a lot of people, especially the bond rating agencies were striking a note of caution about that. Illinois is still just sort of hanging over the abyss of a junk credit rating status. And so this, you know, does give the governor a way to sort of back off of that without having to say it was the wrong policy or sort of climb down. This is it's sort of an exit door for him on that policy, which a lot of people had been raising questions about. People point to that as one of the reasons that our pension underfunding is as bad as it is now, is that decisions like that in the past, particularly under Governor Rod Blagojevich, but really going back decades, to not make the required actuarial contributions to the pension system lead to big problems down the line, because that money is counted on for growth. If you don't have it in the account to be invested, you're not only missing out on that dollar amount you're shorting, you're missing out on the return on that investment as well.
Well, let me, before we move on from this, Charlie, I'll give you kind of the last word on it, but we're about 3 weeks away from trying to get a budget approved, and the governor's budget plan did include a lot of different ideas for raising revenue. Does this hurt in some way? You know, I could see some lawmakers getting a bit more skittish and saying, hey, you know, things are looking a little better. Maybe we don't have to go as far as we thought we did just a few months ago.
Yeah, I could see people saying that this gives them an excuse to be opposed in greater intensity to the governor's plan to raise or to allow a graduated income tax, for example. But as I said earlier, I don't think you can look at this as being, oh, we're out of the woods. I mean, it's welcome. It's very helpful. The bond rating agencies look favorably upon it after the governor said, well, we're going to make the full pension payment next year. But there's still a long way to go. And I think if I can quote Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park in a news conference this week, he said, manna from heaven may get us out of the desert, but it will not feed us for years to come. And he said, a fair tax, which is the preferred description of the graduated income tax, is our only option to ensure long-term stability. And so, as they say, I think this is welcome news, but in my judgment, it really doesn't change anything long run.
Well, the governor did talk about raising the cigarette tax in his budget plan, but this week, John Cullerton, the president of the state Senate, offered up an idea to, I think it was triple what the governor wanted. And Jacqueline Driscoll, you covered that. How's the reception been to that idea?
Well, we haven't heard much from people outside of Senate President John Cullerton and a few Democrats that were in the press conference there. But I did get word from spokesperson Jordan Abadea for Governor J.B. Pritzker that he would support the idea, even though his initial proposal was to put a 32-cent hike on tobacco or on a pack of cigarettes. This would actually bring that up to a dollar. So it would bring the total statewide tax to $2.98 for a pack of cigarettes.
And do we know what they'd do with the money if this was raised? Have they indicated?
They didn't indicate where it would go, but this was proposed by J.B. Pritzker. So it just sounds like this would just replace his initial proposal.
One of the other things the governor has been wanting to get accomplished, and many others in the legislature as well, is recreational cannabis legislation. They want to see that approved. That legislation, we've been waiting to see a bill, finally got introduced, and was it what everybody thought it was going to be?
I don't know if it was what everybody thought it was going to be, because I don't know what everybody thought it was going to be. But it is a massive piece of legislation, hundreds of pages, and it's from the language that I got on Saturday to the language that was introduced on Monday. It had changed since then. I hear it's going to be amended again. This is not a final product. That has been reiterated time and time again, that they are still working with a lot of legislators to kind of fine-tune some of the details. But we did get to see, much anticipated, how they plan to tax this product, where the tax revenue is going to go. I think those were very important issues that were raised by a lot of people in these discussions. They are going to tax products based on the THC content that is in them. THC is the known as the component that gets you high, the psychoactive component, and how they will tax edibles at a different rate as well. And there's several places where this money is going to go. We see some of it going towards drug treatment funds. Law enforcement is getting a little bit of it. Also, mental health and substance abuse services. We also see money going towards the general revenue fund. And we also see a little bit of money going towards paying down our budget deficit, just 10% there. But there's also this creation of a new grant. It's called the ROC Fund, or Restoring Our Communities, that will be eligible to communities that have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs.
So when we've talked in the past, there has, of course, been some opposition to it, including some black leaders who have been opposed to the idea of it. That sounds like this was reaching out to them.
Right.
Is that – do they – have they come around to possibly supporting this, or have they gone that far yet?
I didn't get a chance to speak to members of the Black Caucus this week, but my understanding is they are still there. They are still negotiating. Representative Jahan Gordon Booth, a Democrat in the Peoria area, is still involved in all of the meetings. State Senator Toy Hutchinson, she's still there as well. But it does sound like this is a very equity-centric bill. That is something that was long said by the governor and his team, that this wasn't going to be about revenue. This was going to be about criminal and social justice. And I think a lot of the components in the bill do address that.
And Charlie, I don't know if you've had a chance to read through this. We've talked about it before, but do you think that that they've done enough here to possibly, you know, appease those that might have been on the fence about supporting it?
It occurs to me that, as with any controversial piece of legislation, you don't need to appease everybody who's opposed. You just need to appease enough people that you can put 60 votes on the bill in the House. you can put 30 votes in the Senate. The law enforcement community is going to be against it no matter what they do. They've made that perfectly clear. Their concerns are, how do you regulate the provision that allows people to grow pot in their own home? How are we able to enforce this? They're concerned about distracted driving. If I'm driving and I've had too much to drink and they pull me over, they can determine pretty accurately and pretty quickly that I'm beyond the limit for sobriety. Unfortunately, with marijuana, as far as I understand it, there is no similar test to the breathalyzer. And whereas alcohol, your metabolism gets it out of your system relatively quickly, traces of marijuana remain within you for weeks, if not months. So I could have had a joint 3 weeks ago, and it would still show up, even though I'm no longer high. Yeah, I know, yeah. Sean's smiling. You can envision that, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it.
Those are legitimate concerns, and law enforcement has raised those, and so I don't see those being addressed in a way that'll get the law enforcement community behind the bill.
I don't know that law enforcement will ever get behind the bill, because again, this is a substance that clearly, it gets people high. It's something that causes a danger to society. But as Charlie was talking about, like a similar equipment or tool as a breathalyzer, they actually are testing some products up in Carroll Stream that would basically be a roadside test, and it would be able to test saliva. It hasn't gone through the Fry test, so it wouldn't be able to stand up in court, but they are doing those tests now. Some argue that that still means that we're ahead of this. We're still ahead of the equipment. We're still ahead of the tools that law enforcement has. But I know that Wisconsin has some tools that have gone through the Fry process, so we're getting closer, but that doesn't mean, maybe that means we need to wait for legalization, as law enforcement is saying, because there isn't a really good method for them to make sure the public is safe.
Before I move on here from this topic, just since you've been following it so closely, over the next 3 weeks here, the end of the legislative session, what needs to happen or what should we be watching for on this topic as far as, it goes through the different machinations of legislation?
I think there's going to be a lot of things that we need to pay attention to. Right now, Bloomington State Senator Jason Berrickman, who we've seen as a vocal supporter, he's not really in support of marijuana, but he supports legalization. He thinks it's inevitable. But he has said this proposal he does not back. He does not support this proposal. And he's said that the governor's office hasn't done a great job at working to get some bipartisan votes. So we'll see how things that he is opposed to work out. One of those things is how they expunge records. Right now, according to the proposal, it would be legal to possess 30 grams, but they'd be expunging records all the way up to 500 grams. He's saying that that goes beyond the legal limit that people can possess. But State Senator Heather Staines says, dispensaries will be able to have that much. So really, no, it depends on how you're looking at it. So I do think that the expungement issue is going to be a big topic of discussion as they move forward.
Okay, we'll continue to watch that. And Brian and Doug, let me go to you on another topic that's, of course, heavily watched at the Capitol and around the state. Statewide infrastructure program, also known as a Capitol plan. Where does that stand?
Well, we've had some small movement on a revenue component for at least part of it this last week. A House committee approved a bill to deal with to raise the state gasoline tax and a number of license plate fees and driver's license fees that would raise $2.4 billion, all of which would be used for road or transportation projects. And the sponsor, Representative Mike Zaleski, pointed out when this thing was being debated that this is a starting point for discussions. He said, look, we're 3 weeks out from the end of the session. We got to start doing something with something. So they moved the bill despite Republican objections that it was being rushed through. And it's not the final word on things. The governor has not signed off on this particular proposal. And it doesn't address so-called vertical building projects, college buildings and other things that are not tied to transportation. And there's no way they're going to approve a capital bill that doesn't address those kind of projects also. And because of the state constitution, you can only use this this money to pay for the transportation projects for transportation. You can't divert gas tax money to pay for other building projects. So this whole vertical building component is going to have to find its own revenue source out there, which has not surfaced yet that I'm aware of. And so they've got their work cut out for them.
I think something notable about this, though, is what the backers here say they're trying to do is get away from this sort of boom and bust cycle of doing a capital construction plan every 10 years, which is what it's basically been in Illinois for the past few decades anyway, a couple of decades at least. And they say that by having this higher gas tax, it's the first time it would have been or it will have been raised in Illinois, assuming this passes, in decades. I think since 1990 was the
last
time. Yeah. So this is something that they say this is a dedicated revenue stream. You don't have to come back here and pass a bill all this time. Now, I think it also has the benefit for Democrats of not requiring the higher vote threshold that's required to issue debt. Typically, a capital plan has a bonding component because, you know, it's considered good debt, right? You want to invest, roads are something that last for decades, buildings last for decades. So it's something that's viewed as an acceptable reason to borrow from the markets and have taxpayers, pay for it over 30 years, the way you do for a mortgage for a house, as opposed to bad debt, which is borrowing to pay for things you're doing this year or things you've done in the past, which is what a lot of our bonding has done recently in Illinois to pay down bills that we haven't been able to keep up with. But this could be a sort of a transformational moment. I think it's also interesting looking at some of the individual fees here, right? So the license plate fees would double or go up by 50% for most vehicles, except for electric cars, where the license plate fee would go up by 5,700%. Right now, you get a pretty sweet deal if you have an electric car. You can get a license plate for just, I think it's $17.50. Under this legislation, that would go up to $1,000 every year just for the privilege of driving your electric vehicle on Illinois roads.
And the reason for that, Brian, is because they don't pay as much in the gas tax, right?
They don't pay anything in the gas tax.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so if you have a battery-operated car, and they say this is, yes, that is actually more than the average Illinois driver would pay in a gas tax in a year, even at the new higher rate that's being proposed. But some of the backers of this say, well, they've gotten a free ride for a long time, so this is sort of a retroactive clawback of some of the money they should have been paying all along. Meanwhile, environmentalists are saying, no, this is 2019. Mm-hmm. We have climate change. We have all these reasons we should be encouraging people to go with electric vehicles, not punishing them for it.
And Doug, real quick, I mean, despite all of this discussion, this is something people want. I mean, both sides really can get behind a capital construction program.
They can get behind the idea of projects coming to their districts. The bigger problem, of course, is finding a way to pay for it. And I think we saw that to a certain degree this last week when this House committee approved this gas tax proposal and these other fees, but it was on a party line vote. And both parties can get behind at least part of this idea.
Real quick, Brian, if you can give us an update on DCFS. There was an audit out on this agency, which has certainly been in the spotlight over the last few months with some deaths of children that had been in DCF care and being watched by the agency. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, there were a couple of developments this week. The one was an audit that came out. There had been a special audit requested to look at how the department handles specifically abuse and neglect investigations. And so what this audit really shows is during the budget impasse, really between budget years 15 and 17, the number of abuse and neglect investigations increased significantly. There was one year where it increased by 16%. The hotline where people call in had to send people to voicemail far more frequently. At one point in 2017, more than half the people who called the hotline would just have to leave a message and wait for somebody to get back to them to report abuse or neglect. And it just showed a number of other problems. Investigators not properly documenting their investigations. Finding cases where there was abuse or neglect that had happened and yet saying, well, no further services are needed. And then The other development that happened this week is a group of legislators, Democrats in the Illinois House, got together to say to form what they're calling a child welfare reform caucus. This is something where they say they really want to take seriously this issue. There are actually a couple of legislators who have had state involvement in their lives. One said that she was exposed to opiates in the womb and thanks the government for removing her from her birth mother and placing her with her grandparents so she could be raised in a loving household, she said. And she raised the concern, as did a number of other lawmakers, that maybe this emphasis on intact families has run its course or would needs to be reevaluated at least, and that in some cases maybe there should be more emphasis on getting kids out of a bad situation. Of course, where do you put them? That's another big question here. So this is, they say, the beginning of an effort to try and grapple with this problem. But as recent news stories have shown, there are some very high-profile deaths of children who have been involved with DCFS and many scores more that never really make the news.
Before we go to our notes from the field, I think we'd be remiss if we did not mention the death of Tom Hines, former Cook County assessor, also was a state Senate president, father of Dan Hines, who was the state controller and now serves as a deputy governor for J.B. Pritzker. Charlie, in just a few seconds, if you could give your thoughts and memories about Tom Hines.
Well, in my judgment, Tom Hines was exactly what you would want to see in a state legislator. He was a very thoughtful guy, very considerate, ultimate gentleman. I don't recall him ever raising his voice or ever getting mad, at least in public. And he was one who was very eager to work across the aisle. He approached public service as a way to help people. He saw government as a means to assist those who needed care that they could not provide for themselves. He was not a grandstander. He was pretty low key. I think that if some of our current office holders would just look back and reflect on Tom Hines's attributes and his service as a state senator, then as Senate president, then as Cook County assessor, and kind of try and model their behavior after the pattern that he set, I think we'd all be better off.
Let's go to our notes from the field. Jacqueline, we'll start with you.
One thing I didn't get to mention, talking about recreational cannabis, another important thing to keep your eye on is home grow. There may be some changes there. Spoke to State Senator Heather Staines, and right now people are allowed to grow up to five plants in their own home, but they may be changing that to only medical patients would be eligible to do so.
Charlie?
Well, we've been at this legislative session now since January. There have been 6,100 bills roughly introduced. So far, 11 have cleared both houses. One of the more recent ones is a bill that would allow undocumented students, people who are not U.S. citizens but who are residents of Illinois, as well as transgender individuals, to qualify for the monetary award program, which provides scholarships to college students.
All right, that's our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Jacqueline Driscoll, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.